I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. He's wrapped up in a sex scandal, is dealing with a less than cooperative legislature, is a subject of a legal investigation, and has the word impeachment floating around him. You could be thinking of Donald Trump, but we're talking about Missouri Governor Eric Greitens. A special panel formed by the state's House of Representatives has issued its initial report, and we'll go through it for you today. We'll get detail and analysis from political reporters and hear from state lawmakers on the matter. We'll also consider whether the allegations against the governor, if true, qualify as sexual assault or abuse. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Jefferson City is in tumult. A report released by a special legislative committee Wednesday offered new and startling details about a 2015 extramarital affair between Governor Eric Greitens and a hairdresser. Much of what the report disclosed was dark and involved violence against the woman. The governor, though, remains defiant, insisting that he'll remain in office, even though impeachment proceedings appear to be in the offing. This morning, we'll try to corral this fast-moving story for you and bring you up to speed on the forecast for our formal ouster of the governor. With us once again, KCUR's Brian Ellison covers Missouri government. Brian, welcome back.
Morning, Steve.
Jason Rosenbaum is a State House reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
I should say that not all of what we're going to discuss today is going to be appropriate for all listeners, so please be forewarned here. Brian Ellison, this report is out. What surprised you the most about what it said?
Well, Steve, I think we all knew that the allegations against the governor were uncomfortable and in some cases controversial or difficult to hear about. But I think everyone was surprised at the level of graphic detail in the report, as well as the sort of the salacious nature of some of the accusations that are made against the governor in the testimony. Allegations that have been described by lawmakers who read the report variously as abuse and as assault. And so we really do have a lot to unpack.
Jason, what about you? What caught you by surprise here?
Well, what was notable were the allegations the woman claimed against the governor. I mean, coercion into oral sex, physical violence. And you said it was a fast-moving story, Steve, but there's a pretty recent development in court that the defense was given a tape of this woman being deposed at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, right around when this was happening. And on that tape, and I'm just reading this now in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and also from Rachel Lippman, our reporter, it gives an entirely different explanation than what was in this report. And the defense for Greitens is accusing Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner of gross misconduct and are asking that case to be thrown out. So this provides a whole new wrinkle to this story because, you know, just an hour or two ago, I was reading the report and I was taken aback like everybody else. But after reading through all of this, like, I'm not sure what to think anymore, to be honest.
I'm confused about what you're saying here, Jason. What has changed in your mind based on what you're reading here?
According to Rachel Lippman, the attorneys for Greitens were given a tape of the woman being deposed yesterday, right around the time the report was done. They were told that the tape had malfunctioned, but then they got the tape like right after this House committee report came out. According to Rachel, it says, defense attorney says the video contradicts much of what the woman told the special House committee, and the prosecutors are saying it doesn't contradict the issue at the heart of the case, which is invasion of privacy.
So just slow down. We're talking about two different testimonies that the same woman gave here,
yes.
The alleged victim here. We're
yes.
talking about testimony before the House committee, the special House committee, that's the report that broke yesterday that's made statewide headlines. Now you're talking about a separate video recording, Jason?
Yes. That was part of this woman's deposition for the felony invasion of privacy trial, and they're asking that case to be thrown out, and Judge Burleson has taken that request under advisement, according to Rachel. We don't know when that ruling may come.
And that request was made, what, this morning, Jason?
Yeah, yeah. It was made in court in St. Louis. I'm in Jefferson City right now, so I'm just absorbing this information like minutes before I was supposed to come on here.
Let me grab Brian Ellison from KCUR to weigh in here.
One of the realities, Steve, is that the report that came out yesterday was from the House Investigative Committee that covered a lot of territory and was not focused necessarily on only the criminal case going on in St. Louis. Now, that certainly was the impetus for the formation of the committee.
The extramarital affair and the allegations involved there, you're talking about.
That's right. And, of course, remember, there's a single felony charge of invasion of privacy involved the taking of a photograph of the woman nude or partially nude without her consent and the transmission of that photograph. But what came out in the report, at least according to the woman's testimony, is much more about this relationship, this affair between Greitens and the woman who has not been named. She's described only as witness one. The photograph incident is actually a very small part of the testimony.
Yes. It's
other things that happened, including in that very incident involving the woman being kissed and undressed without her consent, and even at one point saying she did not want to do this. According to her testimony, the governor laying down beside her and eventually that leading to her performing oral sex on Greitens. It is a very salacious report, and I'm glad you gave the listeners a warning about some of the content today.
But my point is, Jason now is raising a new wrinkle here, which is this testimony that you're referring to, Brian, maybe being contradicted by what the alleged victim spoke about over in St. Louis before the grand jury there. What can you tell us about that?
I'm looking at the same St. Louis Post-Dispatch report that I think Jason is just now, and it appears to me, Steve, that the allegation is that that deposition he mentions is something that we knew about, but which initially the St. Louis Circuit Attorney had said the recording equipment had not worked properly, and that's why there was no availability of that for the defense attorneys. It sounds like that video is now available. Is that your understanding, Jason, that we're talking about that same deposition?
Again, I'm getting this information from other news sources. I wasn't at the trial today. I'm just going by what I'm reading from the Post-Dispatch and from Rachel Lipman's Twitter. And I know this kind of sounds hurried and rushed, but I mean, I don't know if we can really discuss this report without bringing in this new development, because it brings, again, what from reading this secondhand, it kind of brings what she told the House committee into question here. If she said something different on this videotape deposition.
And that's why we keep saying this story is fast moving, because it is changing. It is evolving as the days pass here and we get closer to the trial involving Governor Greitens about a month down the road. The criminal case involving the invasion of privacy, that case goes to trial in about a month here. You know, let me turn back to what we do know in front of us here, the report that came out yesterday. You can't help but wonder why, Brian, based on the woman's testimony under oath here last week before the special House committee, why the governor also wasn't charged with some kind of assault, because that seems to come through, as you're alluding to here, pretty clearly in this report. Do we know what the answer to that is?
Well, we don't know what motivated the prosecuting attorney to bring the charges that she did. We don't know what the grand jury considered when they handed up just the one indictment for invasion of privacy. What we do know, though, is that there were two separate processes, Steve. So we have no reason to think necessarily that all of the testimony that we've read about now in this House report was in the hands of the prosecutor at the time that she filed those charges back in, oh gosh, I think it was February now, mm-hmm. at this point. It would just be speculating, but I would suspect that she did not have all this information, or at least didn't find that there was probable cause that it could be proven in a court of law. Now, in this report, with all the details that our listeners have probably heard about to some degree now, we know that the governor did not respond to the committee. The committee invited him several times to make a response.
Testify.
He declined to testify. His attorneys did not provide documents that were requested by the committee. And so we are are getting, it is true, one side of the story, plus some corroborating witnesses who are friends of the woman who say that she told them these things at the time they were happening, as well as the witness of her former husband, who secretly recorded conversations with her saying some of these things. Those things are all on the record, but the governor's side isn't represented, which the House committee is honest about, is clear about in their report. But at the same time, they did invite the governor to respond, and he chose not to.
Jason Rosenbaum, again from St. Louis Public Radio. Do you have a sense of why the governor wasn't charged with assault?
I don't.
It's a mystery, though, isn't it, Jason?
I can't answer that question. I will just say, and I haven't talked to legislators since this development occurred, like, the sentiment among legislators now is going forward with this impeachment process. And I think that the mindset is now that after this report came out and there's allegations of physical and sexual abuse, because the trial doesn't necessarily talk about the physical abuse that's alleged in this report, where it's alleged that Greitens hit this woman, I think, on several occasions.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is, even with this new wrinkle, the issues that will likely lead to the possible impeachment don't necessarily go away, because some of the things that are at this trial aren't really addressed in the report. Aren't really addressed in the report, as Brian alluded to. So but I think you're seeing kind of a bipartisan influx and bipartisan consensus that if Greitens doesn't end up leaving, he'll be shown the door by both parties.
I couldn't agree more, Steve. I think that is the real problem facing the governor now, believe it or not, is maybe not the criminal trial, but is the possibility that the broader range of things that are discussed in this report are going to amount in legislators' minds to sufficient, as the Constitution says, acts of moral turpitude, grounds for impeachment, whether he is convicted on the charge of invasion of privacy or not. And I think that's really what is in their minds at this point.
So what the two of you are saying right now is that it's possible that the governor could ultimately be found innocent of the invasion of privacy charge, but still be impeached and removed from office as governor of the state of Missouri. Brian, do I have that right?
It is entirely possible. Now, whether the momentum will shift in some way, which is certainly what the governor was counting on in his press conference yesterday. He said, in 33 days, I will be cleared and the
right.
people will see that I am innocent. But that's not the way the legislators are talking, at least today. They're speaking of extending the legislative session, calling a special session, and beginning the machinery that's necessary to bring articles of impeachment against the governor. And that doesn't seem dependent on the criminal case.
Let's talk about that whole process of impeachment just for a moment, Jason. What does happen? How does this begin? How long would it take? You've talked about that before on the show. Can you walk us through that again?
I don't know how long it will take, because I think it's not – there's been – an impeachment of a statewide official in the last 20 years, Judy Moriarty, Secretary of State. I think that when you're talking about governor, it's uncharted territory. But just as kind of a brief synopsis, the House would vote about whether to impeach or not, and then it would go to the Senate to pick eminent jurists that would then decide whether Greitens violated aspects of the Constitution.
So the senators themselves wouldn't cast judgment, render judgment here.
No.
It's this group of seven outsiders, if you will, regular citizens who'll be brought in to judge the governor.
Well, they're not really outsiders. They're judges. So they're kind of within the governmental system.
Oh, they're actual judicial judge people you're talking about, with robes
judge,
and stuff.
Judge
yeah.
people. And the standards to necessarily violate the different aspects of impeachment is a lot lower than a criminal trial.
Hmm.
Like, it's possible that he runs afoul of something that's listed in the Constitution, like moral turpitude, for example, or that something else comes out from this committee that will lead to the recommendations for impeachment. There's still questions about the Mission Continues fundraising list, about the Confide app. Lawmakers want to know about that, and I'll just add as kind of an ancillary point, lawmakers also want to know where that $15,000 that went to pay Al Watkins, the attorney for the ex-husband, came from, too.
Right, right.
Because if that money came from a source that would benefit from Mike Parson being governor, I think there's Republicans and Democrats, there's bipartisan agreement that while it doesn't necessarily change the calculus about Greitens getting impeached or not, I think just from a transparency standpoint, people need to know that. And people also need to know how the governor's legal bills are being paid as well.
Now, Jason, I have you just for a minute more. You're in the state capitol. You were there yesterday. To what extent are Republicans now beginning to move behind this idea of impeachment? What was your take after spending the day there yesterday?
Republicans were the main people calling for his resignation to begin with. There weren't a lot of Republicans, but you saw more Republicans than Democrats. Now you're seeing more Republicans, and now you're seeing basically every Democrat call for his resignation. I mean, I think that there was an apprehension among Democrats, especially, to call for a resignation when all the facts weren't out, and also because there was fear that Mike Parson would be more politically effective than Greitens at passing Republican priorities. But the consensus among both parties here from talking to them yesterday is any short-term political considerations are kind of out the window, and this paralysis that kind of encapsulates the state now because of this unknown when Greitens is going to stay or go, it's kind of reaching a level that's beyond just typical partisan politics, if that makes sense.
Jason Rosenbaum, I know you've got to go, so I want to thank you very much for your time as usual. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Jason Rosenbaum joining us from Jeff City with St. Louis Public Radio. Brian Elston, I cut you off there.
No, not at all. And I was curious from Jason. One of the things that's really interesting to me, Steve, is that as Republicans have moved toward calling for a resignation and Democrats as well, I have not heard any Republican leader or legislator actually speak up in the last 24 hours and say they're standing with the governor. The governor has made some pretty strong accusations that this is a, quote, political witch hunt, that it's an absurd political witch hunt. I have not heard anyone saying that they agree with him. And if he doesn't have any friends in Jefferson City, this process isn't going to go well for him.
I just want to raise the point here. We're talking about impeachment. We're talking about calls for resignation. They're really sort of two different things politically here, right? Everyone, I think, every politician in the building, the state capitol, would like him to voluntarily resign and leave at this point. But there's this other process of impeachment that is being talked about as well. So when lawmakers are asked about what they want to see happen here, you sort of have to ask two questions. Do you want him to resign? Do you want to go through the process of impeachment? And it's possible you can get different answers there, right?
That's for sure. And in fact, you could even get different answers on whether we should go through the process of impeachment or whether they themselves would vote to impeach. And I don't think we have clarity about that quite yet. We're a long ways from the end of this process as long as Governor Greitens decides to fight it and not resign.
Okay. Well, joining me now is the Director of Education at MOXA. That's the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault, Melanie Austin. Melanie, thanks very much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And if our listeners are just joining us, we're talking about all the goings-on in Jeff City involving Governor Eric Greitens right now. Will he be impeached? Where is the state of Missouri going right now? That's our topic here today. You know, we've spoken with plenty of folks here to dissect the political implications of what's going on with the governor, Melanie. We're hoping you can give us a better sense of how things might look from the point of view of the woman who's involved here. I should again say that not all vote we're going to discuss here is going to be appropriate for all listeners. So look out ahead here. Melanie, there's a lot of speculation floating about whether the allegations against the governor qualify as assault or abuse or something else entirely here. In your opinion, was this sexual assault? How do you categorize the allegations here?
Well, I think thinking about sexual violence, you know, in general, and thinking about coming from a victim's perspective in general, you're looking at the issue of consent here. And is the activity consensual or not? And anytime there's, and what does consent mean? So consent means that it's free, freely given, free from force, free from coercion, free of fear. And so,
and having read the report yesterday, what would you conclude about whether the woman consented to the activities or not?
Well, I think that she talked about not giving consent. So I think that's something, if you do read the report, something to look at, but really important to understand, I think, in general, what that means, for people to understand what that means. And that helps us to know whether or not we can believe somebody when they're talking about sexual abuse or assault.
You know, given what you just said, how surprised are you that the St. Louis prosecutor did not charge the governor with some kind of assault charge here?
I don't know if I can speak on that specifically, I don't know if they had all the information or what information was available at the time, at that point, or what was disclosed.
Okay, the numbers when it comes to sexual assault and sexual abuse around the country right now are absolutely staggering. Can you remind us what those are?
Yeah, you know, sexual abuse and assault affect everybody. We know that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will experience sexual abuse or assault by the time they turn 18 years old. There's a stat that 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men will experience sexual assault in their lifetime. And so we know this is an issue that affects everybody.
Yeah. We've talked about how this woman wanted privacy and it was violated here. She didn't want this information to leak. We're looking for some reaction from our listeners here. Does the public interest in this situation outweigh the right to privacy about what the report details as a traumatic event? Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Melanie, there were questions on social media, again, as to why, if the woman had a sexually coercive experience with the governor, as she testified, she would choose to see and be involved with him again. That's not uncommon, though, is it? Can you fill us in there?
No, it's not uncommon. And, you know, relationships are complex. We know that. Also, sexual violence, there's often an element of power and control in that dynamic. And oftentimes we do see that victims react out of fear or coercion.
So why would
something happens?
Why would she go back and continue the affair in the weeks to come, in the weeks after the initial encounter, in the way she did?
Yeah, honestly, I can't speak specifically about that, but I think for victims in general, it, like I said before, it can be complex that she may have felt or a victim may feel in fear of what a reaction might be. You know, fear that something may be shared that they don't want shared, or fear of how somebody may react to them physically.
So she goes back as a way to sort of appease the man and maybe not have anything bad happen towards the woman in a case like this.
Yes, sure.
Okay. She also didn't want this story to get out, which I guess would be understandable. How frequently do situations like this go unreported or unprosecuted?
Yeah, you know, well, I think those are two different questions. So we know that 2 out of 3 cases of sexual abuse or assault go unreported.
2 of 3.
2 of 3. And you can
That's
find
a discouraging number.
Yeah, it really is. It's really disheartening. And, you know, fortunately, I think in the era that we're in of Me Too and people feeling more comfortable to come forward, I think that's hopeful that people are feeling more supported, that they will be believed if they disclose abuse or assault. You know, the experience of sexual violence is traumatic and has devastating effects for people, not only for themselves, for their health, for their ability to, you know, maintain relationships and hold down jobs and everything, but it also affects their loved ones, you know, their family members. And so, yeah, the 2 out of 3 isn't a surprise to me, but I do hope that that number is going to improve with people coming forward now.
I'm visiting with Melanie Austin. She's with the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. The group is known as MOXA. What is the process like, Melanie, if you want to take legal action against someone who has sexually assaulted you? And why do people shy away from that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would like to let everybody know listening that should you have questions about that process, you can call MOXA's crisis line. It's 24 hours a day. That's 816-531-0233. Mm-hmm. And you can find that number on our website.
Right.
And so you have a couple of options. You can choose to report to police. You can also choose to go to a hospital and have a forensic exam done. And that's where they will collect evidence. In the metro area here, we do send advocates to the hospital to provide support, provide information. You know, so those are a couple of options that you have when you want to report something. And obviously, if it's a case involving children, you can report it to the child abuse hotline.
So a woman who shies away from going through this process, she would shy away from it. Why?
Oh, you know, victims often fear that they won't be believed. Mm-hmm. They feel ashamed that they'll be blamed for what happened. you know, out of fear, possibly, of what, you know, what might happen to them or to people that they love, should they come forward.
I want to get to this point, too, before I lose you. It seems that situations like the woman described, I mean, there's this fine line between flattering attention and manipulation. What are the warning signs, or what's the difference between the two as far as you're concerned, Melanie?
I think it comes back to consent again. And the reason I say that is because consent should always be given no matter how long you're in a relationship. If you're married, if you've just met somebody, anytime there's any activity of a sexual nature, consent should be freely given. So you don't have to determine if it's flattering somebody or if it's assault. You know, you determine what is okay when it comes to sexual activity, and that should be freely communicated.
Again, Governor Greitens, to be fair, maintains this was a consensual relationship.
I think that's his right to maintain that. You know, if that.
Brian Ellison.
At least according to the report, it was a consensual relationship on her part as well. What was not necessarily consensual was each individual act that occurred within the context of that consensual relationship. And to be fair, she expresses to the committee some confusion, some moments where she's not certain whether she communicated a non-consent or not. She says her own feelings were conflicted. She says she uses the word confused a number of times about how she felt in a given situation. But having said that, there are a number of other clear instances. One at her hair salon, where he puts his hand and runs it up her leg, where she did not give consent. One in his basement, where that led to a sexual encounter, where she says, "I did not consent to that. I did not consent to that." So the two are held in sort of a tension, which I imagine is true in a lot of these situations.
Yeah.
And I mean, we like to talk about consent as it should be pretty black and white, and it should be free, and you should be able to verbally say it. And that's not always part of our culture right now, but that's what consent means. And I think the important thing is, like, just here is free from fear. Free from fear of what might happen to you if you don't consent.
Well, and so, you know, when a person is in a position to give consent, so in that March 21st incident, the one where the photo was allegedly taken, that incident ends with the woman saying that she was in tears and lying on the floor of the basement, and the governor, Greitens, laid down next to her, spoke some words of comfort, and that then proceeded to another sexual encounter. Mm-hmm. Was she in a position to give consent? She didn't. She does not claim she was. She's not claim she was assaulted. She doesn't say that. But at the same time, something happened at a time when a lot of people would say that shouldn't have happened.
Okay, we're going to leave our conversation there for this part of our program here today. We're going to continue in our second half talking with a couple of lawmakers with their reactions to all the goings on in Jeff City, a Republican and a Democrat. I want to thank Melanie Austin again with the Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. Thanks very much for coming in. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Brian Ellison's going to stick around with us in our second half here today. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, we spoke with NPR's Mara Liasson about Paul Ryan's upcoming retirement as House Speaker and what it can mean for the Republican Party. You can hear that discussion at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, our favorite film critics stop by to tell us what's showing around town, including movies about exiled dogs, outdoor art, and a geriatric road trip. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, we're going to continue our conversation about all the goings-on in Jeff City right now involving Governor Eric Greitens, possible impeachment hearings, continuing accusations of inappropriate conduct with a woman who was his mistress for a while back in 2015. The governor denies any wrongdoing here. I want to get an idea now of how state lawmakers are responding to this report and these allegations against the governor. To do that, we're speaking now with Missouri State Representative Kevin Corlew. He's a Republican from Kansas City. And Representative, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks for taking some time.
Hi, Steve. Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Well, you're a Republican. I should just emphasize here, to what extent are Republicans united on two ideas here, Representative, whether the governor should resign for one thing or whether he should be impeached for another?
Well, Steve, I think you probably have varying degrees on those questions. I came out after the indictment and expressed that I felt like the governor should resign. With the release of the report and the additional facts that we have, I've taken another step and said that we should look at impeachment proceedings and proceed on that. But there are, as I mentioned, varying degrees. There are probably more in the camp that says he should resign, and really that would be the right thing, and then the legislature would not have to move to the next step. And then you have another group that also think that we should move for impeachment. It's probably a little bit less of legislators and less vocal, but I think there is certainly a recognition that the allegations that have been made have been found to be credible by an investigatory committee, and they're very troubling to all of us.
What surprised you most about the investigative report that the special House committee issued yesterday, Representative?
Well, I thought that it was done very thoroughly. You've got committee members on there. You've got three of whom are experienced attorneys who have taken hundreds of depositions. You've got people that are involved in law enforcement on the committee. So these are people that are used to digging down deep and getting the facts. And I thought they did so. They asked a lot of questions. They found the witness to be credible, as well as the two corroborating witnesses that to be credible as well. And so I thought that it was done thoroughly. The facts were surprising to me and disturbing to me. That we learned much more than we had known before, and that was troubling.
I'm visiting with Representative Kevin Corlew, a Republican from Kansas City, about the allegations involving Governor Eric Greitens. Representative, if there's going to be an impeachment here, that process starts in the House, what would happen first, and what's your sense of how long this would take?
Well, as of now, the Speaker of the House has said that he would like to let the committee continue to work and to complete its process, and probably complete it after the trial takes place in May, as it's currently scheduled. If that were the case, then there would be a special session called for the purpose of the impeachment proceedings. Now, I would say that you might also see next week that there might be legislators who would file articles of impeachment or a resolution toward that end. But I think that the leadership and legislators are sitting down and really thinking through what is the best approach to this, to be thorough, to be fair, and to be accurate.
Kevin, just one final point I want to make with you before you leave us. This notion that the end of the legislative session is on top of us now is traditionally a very busy time. How is the focus on the governor affecting the General Assembly's ability right now to deal with issues like highways and education?
Well, to this point, Steve, I think the legislature has done a good job of being able to do the work of the people of the legislature, to continue to work on the legislative agenda that the people have sent us to work on. And we've done a good job of doing that and staying on course. Now, obviously, with the release of the report yesterday and now what ramifications that takes place, there's no doubt that there are some distractions. I do think that you're going to see people continue, though, to focus in on the legislative agenda. We work on a variety of issues all the time up here, so we can work on the issues with the governor. At the same time, we continue to pursue the legislative agenda, and we're going to the best we can.
You can walk and chew gum at the same time, you're saying, Kevin.
Yes. The people have sent us up to do a variety of things, and we're going to continue to do that.
That's Representative Kevin Corlew, a Republican from Kansas City. Thanks so much for your time today, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Take care.
We're joined now by Missouri State Representative Lauren Arthur. She's a Democrat from the Clay County area. And Representative, it's nice to have you as well. Thanks for taking some time.
Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
You've been calling for the governor to step down since this news first broke in January. Tell us why you have felt that way for as long as you have.
Sure. Well, I'll say, yesterday the respective caucuses had a chance to preview the report before its public release. And at the beginning of our meeting, the special committee members made it a point to say that all five Republicans and two Democrats found the key witness credible, that there was evidence to corroborate her account, that she testified under oath, and that the governor was invited to testify but declined. And then we went through the report, and it was very upsetting to hear about the coerced sexual activity, the blackmail threat, and the physical violence. And as I was listening, it reaffirmed my belief, which I've had since January, that this person responsible, Eric Greitens, does not have the moral authority to lead the state. And the fact that we left session early and have several days off that we didn't anticipate having also speaks to the fact that this is disrupting our ability to conduct the business of the state.
So you think it is disrupting the ability of lawmakers to do the work they have to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my opinion, it's a mistake to continue with the business. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be addressing very serious issues facing Missouri, but I think, you know, it's unrealistic to say that we can continue with this business as usual as this very serious issue hangs over our heads. And the idea that we would pass legislation knowing that it would go to Eric Greitens, who gets to make the final decision about whether or not he signs it or vetoes it. And I don't think it's in the interest of the state or in the interest of making good public policy.
I just want to get your reaction to some comments that the governor said yesterday in his own defense. I mean, he again is saying the report is full of lies. The truth will come out in his trial next month. Let's listen just to a few seconds of what Governor Greitens told reporters yesterday in his office in the state capitol.
And they know, they need to know, that fake charges and falsehoods aren't going to stop us. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. When I came into politics as an outsider, I was attacked with falsehoods every day. They attacked my service as a Navy SEAL. They attacked my service to veterans through the Mission Continues. They attacked my humanitarian work. Since we got into office, they have attacked us every single day. But know this. They don't scare us. We're not scared by their lies, and we are not afraid of their falsehoods.
Representative Arthur, I'm wondering what your reaction is to that, because the governor is suggesting that he's the victim.
Yeah, no, I was pretty insulted when he came out and he attacked the real victim in his press conference and then tried to undermine the integrity of respected House committee members. I have the highest respect for that office. I don't have respect for the person who holds it right now. And the fact is, people testified under oath, and now the person, Eric Greitens, who's calling everyone else liars, is the only person at this point who has been unwilling to testify under oath.
Representative Arthur, are you aware of any of your colleagues in the legislature from either side of the aisle who are standing with Governor Greitens at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was trying to think through any members who I know who publicly supported him. And frankly, I can't think of Democrats or Republicans who are willing to say that they do.
Representative Lauren Arthur is my guest. And, you know, I'm curious whether you think women who serve in the General Assembly are hearing this report any differently from the men who still hold, you know, a disproportionate number of the power positions in the state capitol.
Well, I think it certainly makes the case that we need more women in leadership positions and more women in office. And as we were going through the report as a caucus yesterday, I did notice that several women were having very visceral, and myself included, very visceral and personal reactions to it. And I think, unfortunately, that it's something a lot of women can relate to. It's something that resonates with women in terms of power dynamics and expectations. And, you know, I think that wherever there is a victim who's been abused or who's been coerced, that we should take those allegations very seriously.
That's Missouri State Representative Lauren Arthur, a Democrat from the Clay County area. Representative, always nice to have you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Take care.
I want to thank Brian Ellison from KCUR for sticking around and offering us some expert commentary here. Always appreciate it, Brian.
Thank you, Steve.
Tomorrow, the film critics are back. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.